Oh, it's a pig!
We will be back after the short break.
Today's podcast brought to you by LakeErieKayakFishing.com. Come along with me and experience one of the best freshwater fisheries in the world while chasing monsters kayak fishing Lake Erie. We now return to the show.
Welcome to the Lake Erie Kayak Anglers Podcast, the podcast designed to make you a better angler. I'm Chuck Earls from LakeErieKayakFishing.com. Today I have a special co-host, Mike Elsia, joining me today. We're going to be interviewing the USA Predator Fishing Team. We have Ryan Buddy and Nick Schertz with us today. How you guys doing?
Doing good. Glad to have you have us on.
Yeah, well. Thanks for joining us.
Glad to have you on, fellas.
Yeah, so basically what we're going to do, I have a list of questions. Mike has put together a list of questions, and we're just going to kind of ping pong. I'll give you guys a question, give each of you an opportunity to answer it if you want to. And then Mike will field the next question to you guys, and we'll just kind of go from there. And, you know, just have fun. There's no expectations or anything other than to kind of promote what you guys did and your trip. And, you know, maybe you give us some secrets for this this tournament next week.
Yeah.
So first question I have, real simple, basically, just want to kind of get to know you guys a little bit better. Ryan, I know we've fished together in the Lake Erie Walleye Trail. Nick, I don't know you. I know you're in the Masters Walleye Circuit.
National Walleye Tour. I fished, and every year except last year, I fished head to head. And then now back in the National Walleye Tour again now. So, yep.
Cool. So I want to give you guys an opportunity just to give us a little bit of background. A few key points that I have. What inspired you to get into fishing? What was the turning point in your career that you think was the number one action that propelled you to where you are today? And what goals do you have moving forward in the future?
I'll take that. What inspired me to go fishing? I mean, I don't, that was just one of those things. Like I don't remember the first time I went fishing. You know, it was just, I was a super little kid. You know, my grandpa, my dad got me into it. I grew up with the Rocky River right in my backyard, a great steelhead river. And then my grandpa had a boat. So, he'd taken me out in Lake Erie, and it was just like, one of those things you just did, just like you walk, you breathe, you fish, it was just something. I was never sick of fishing, so, that's what got me into it for sure. And that's, nothing's changed with regards to that too. And, now because of that, I have a passion for getting kids involved with fishing as well, my own kids and kids clinics and all that, but then, to your next point, the one thing for sure stands out, and what, the biggest thing that propelled me to, into this career, in fishing, and, probably one of the most important things I did in my life was, when I was when I was in college, summers in college, I worked construction for my dad, and I was really sick of shoveling gravel and, wheelbarrow concrete and, things like that. And I just I gotta go find something else that's more me, And I flooded the market up, and I got this idea to go up to Alaska and be a fishing guide. I flooded the market up there with a bunch of resumes and made a bunch of phone calls and just was really persistent about it. And I ended up getting a job as a fishing guide in Alaska, So that put me into fishing as a job, and it really taught me just a lot of great life lessons, not just fishing, but, responsibility, work ethic, all those kinds of things, and found that, hey, I can make a career of something that I love to do, So that's, and then just the fishing aspect, it diversified me as a fisherman too, river fishing, salmon, trout, all that. And then, you know, then I came back after college back to Ohio here, and, you know, just started getting into walleye fishing. And then from there turned into, well, might as well compete. I'm competitive, just small little tournaments. And, you know, I grew into, you know, I've been doing, you know, I think in 2010, I started in the Masters Walleye Circuit. That was the first time I got into like a national level. And, you know, every year since then, I've been doing that, you know. And then what was the last part you said? Oh, goals. You know, I've always wanted to win like one of the biggest, you know, in the biggest events that I've been doing, you know. And if you would have asked me before this last event, I would have probably told you my biggest goal in fishing would be to win a national walleye tour, you know, which I haven't done that. I've come close, but I haven't done that yet. But now I would rather win this. I mean, you know, there's something special, like, you know, winning a gold medal for the United States of America, wearing the red, white, and blue. I mean, when I first saw that jersey with USA Angling on it, you know, I almost, you know, I got emotional about it, you know, a little bit. And then, you know, and seeing those guys win and, you know, the gold medal and national anthem and all that, like, that's it, man. You know, there's no paycheck associated with that. So what, you know, there's some things that are priceless in life. So, you know, that would be it for me, you know. Sorry, that was a little long-winded, but I think I got your question. So
I was checking out some of the previous YouTube videos on some of the events that the FIPSED puts on. And it's an emotional experience. You know, you're standing there representing your country, surrounded by people just like you representing their country, you know, in just a collective location. I don't know if you can ever explain that feeling.
Yeah,
Ryan, you hit that right on the head, man, when you talked about it being an emotional experience for sure. When I know, speaking for myself and probably Chuck too at this point, but when we got the call to be a part of what we're a part of here with, you know, with the kayak deal, I mean, it was all I could do just to contain myself. And then again, just the other day when I got our jerseys in the mail and I opened that box, and I saw my name on that jersey, I about lost it again.
So yeah, wait till you get over there.
Exactly what you're talking about, man.
Yeah, wait till you get over there and you're about to get on the water with that jersey on. You know,
right?
The opening ceremonies and all that, you know, so...
Yeah,
you know, it's a pretty cool experience for sure. You know,
absolutely, man.
Nick, let's hear it.
Did you want to go ahead?
Yeah, sure. So, I grew up on in another walleye factory. You know, you guys coming from Erie, I grew up on the Winnebago system, and I like Ryan. I kind of born into a fishing family, and for as far back as I can remember, that's what we did. I was a You know, I'm an outdoorsman now, and I grew up an outdoorsman, spending a lot of time hunting and fishing. And, you know, when we were younger, my dad got us into a little bit of commercial fishing, starting when I was probably like 8 years old. And I did that in the summers from the time I was 8 till about the time I was out of college, from about 8 to 22. I had commercial fish in the summer, which put me on the water every single day, usually 2 or 3 times. And just being on the water all the time, I just, you know, I was like, I couldn't get enough of it. And I kind of went on different whims of multi-species fishing, from walleyes to bass to catfish to just about everything, panfish. And, you know, went through my stint once I got my driver's license of running around and trout fishing, fly fishing. And I knew my dad did some of the local events on Winnebago, and I knew that kind of really interested me. I started jumping in a few with him, and then when, you know, he kind of had somebody else he fished with, so I jumped in with a neighbor and won a local event, I think, when I was in like, I don't know, probably I was probably like 17 or 18, and won a local event, you know, a pretty big event on Winnebago. And I mean, I knew that's what I wanted to shoot for. I went to college at University of Wisconsin Stevens Point, one of the biggest college of natural resources in the country. And, you know, I knew I wanted to be involved in water. I got a water chemistry major and ended up with a few degrees in the water, aquatic toxicology and water chemistry. and worked in the consulting for that water and soil cleanup. But, you know, my goal was always to start fresh, buy my own boat and start doing it. So I, you know, shortly out of college, I bought a boat, bought a motor a little bit later, pieced everything together. And I started fishing in like, you know, late 90s. I graduated from college in 97. By 99, I had a boat put together that I could kind of fish some small local tournaments. And then about the time the FLW started the state leagues, I started fishing the Pro-Am format in 04, and then started fishing pro circuit as a pro in 09. And I've been doing that ever since. So it's like, you know, like Ryan said, it's all, everything you do is like a, you know, it's like a chapter in your career. And sometime along the line, around 2013, I got involved in, because I ice fish quite a bit. I live up in a very cold climate, and I've always been crazy into ice fishing as well, because that's really all you can do in winter when you live up here. So I got involved in Team USA on the ice side in 2013, and that really fit me well right off the bat. That's very, you know, it's a very different discipline than United States ice fishing, because it's no electronics and no power. So it's all hand augering and just basics. So it's almost like an athletic competition. It goes really fast and short heats. Anyway, I competed in that successfully probably for up until now. We kind of missed a few years because of COVID, but should be going back to Estonia here this winter. But during the course of that, I ran, you know, I mean, I met a lot of our U.S. delegates for FIPSED, the same governing body of all this stuff. And they confronted me about, you know, if I would be interested in helping put together a team for Predator, being that I was fishing the walleye tour. So that's when I started reaching out and talking to different people that are multi-species anglers, you know, and trying to put together the right kind of people that would, you know, I kind of judge basically looking at people that they're going to have the same gut feeling of what Ryan said, because, you know, I had been there on the ice, and I know that my hair stands up when I put that jersey on and I'm representing my country, and that there is nothing that is like that at all. And I kind of thought about that. I, you know, helped get some of these guys assembled, and we're off to the races with it. And that's kind of how it all started. And so far, I feel like, just like with ice, every trip we do, this is my third one that I've fished in for Predator. And, you know, we learn a little bit, even though we're going to different countries and fishing different species of fish, you still, you know, you write a new chapter and you learn more every time. And we, you know, it's tough under the way we're doing it, with just the two official practice days, rather than spending some time ahead of time like most of the other countries are doing at these bodies of water. But everyone we do, we gain a little bit more invaluable knowledge. So I feel like we're moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
I agree. I'm I don't know. It's what, less than a week away. We fly out on Thursday. Actually, Wednesday we'll be over for the Lake Erie Walleye Trail thing, me and Ryan, and then Thursday we fly out fishing on Friday.
Yeah, it's crazy. And yeah, it'll go fast.
The other side of the world.
Yeah, and then like 2 weeks from now, you'll talk, you know, you give me a call and you'll be like, oh my gosh, I know double what I know about fishing now than I did 2 weeks ago, you know?
Like, right.
You know, that's what you're going to feel like, you know, after right. that. So.
That's awesome. I want to dig into that, what we started to touch on just a few minutes ago there, Ryan, that feeling, that first initial feeling that you had when you got that call to join Team USA. Really, really delve into that. What did that mean to you?
Well, you know, honestly, so, you know, I was following these guys, you know, I was following Nick and Max and stuff, you know, in the previous years. I think it was, you know, starting in England. And then actually, John Gilman, he was on the England team, you know, and I talked to him quite a bit about it beforehand. And that just kind of got me into it. He didn't really tell me, like, he said, I'm going to England to fish in a tournament. I'm like, well, sweet. How do I get in that? Sign me up, you know? Like, I'll go, you know? Like, I just thought it was like any other tournament, you know? And then I started finding out about it more. And then I actually just reached out to Max Wilson, who, you know, is our team captain. And I was like, I just said, Max, like, what can I do to help? You know, like, I just, like, how can I help? You know, like, is there anything that I can do to support you guys? You know, whatever. And then, you know, he talked to Ben, which he's our team manager, and, you know, maybe some of the other guys. And then they're just like, hey, we'd love to have you. I'm like, really? Seriously? Okay, let's go, you know, game on, you know. And you know, the hard thing about it for me too was, this was like 3 years ago. So I, you know, these conversations happened just after these guys got back from South Africa back in, that was what, early 2020, or no, that was end of 2019.
2019, yeah.
Yeah, end of 2019. And then I was like, okay, we're going to Poland in 9 months, you know, and that's early 2020. Wow. Well, you guys know what happened with that. And then it's been another year. And then, you know, last year got canceled too, because there just wasn't going to be enough participation and travel with the travel restrictions and all. And then not here. So it was like, you know, it's like heartbreaking, like all these years. And then even this year, we only almost had a heartbreak too, because it was supposed to be in Poland. And then Poland had to cancel because, you know, of all the Ukrainian refugees and you know, security issues possibly, and being so close proximity to the war, that, you know, in July, we got notification that it was canceled, and that they're looking for another venue, but not sure. And, you know, at that point, I think, you know, I don't know about you, Nick, but I mean, speaking, my thoughts were like, well, putting something together, an event of this magnitude in 3 months, like, I don't know.
I didn't think it would happen. No, I didn't think it would happen at all.
Yeah. And then, you know, and then we got the news that, okay, Czech Republic's doing it, and off we go, you know. And it was like, it was kind of minimal time to plan, and like, is it really going to happen, you know? And then it did. So it was kind of like
sounds like a roller coaster there for you.
It was a big time roller coaster, you know.
And I was like, 100% we weren't going to go. And then I'm like, yeah, there's exactly like Ryan said, there's no way we're going, because it's way too short a notice to put something together. And then they're like, a week later they came out and they moved it. And I'm like, oh, really? Well, let's go.
All right. You know.
And you know, and I think thankfully everybody pretty much had that attitude. And, you know, like, it's just, like I said, it's just the right group of guys. And I mean, I think I knew about Ryan before Ryan knew about Ryan. That's what's kind of funny, because John Gilman brought him up to me when I started talking to John Gilman about it, and he started giving me Ryan's background. I'm like, yeah, it sounds like it'll work. So yeah, it's worked out great. We had a good time together, and all of us worked together really well. And that's important for everybody to get along. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think the dynamics of our team too, you know, we're all come from a little bit, you know, different backgrounds, and maybe, you know, I think we're all very versatile fishermen, but we all kind of also sort of maybe have like a little bit sort of different specialties or different experiences, you know, and I think that's important as a team, you know, to, you know, come together, you know. So
that's what makes
you learn a lot from each other, the different techniques, different styles of fishing, you know. I mean, even here on Lake Erie, you can go 20 miles down the shoreline and there's different techniques that are more prominent.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time with our group talking about how we were gonna attack, you know, our body of water, the Slappy Dam Reservoir. And, you know, one of the things we had a consensus on going into it without any preconceived notions, but that was that our best opportunity in our short practice would be to go there and try to fish our own styles of fishing, and, you know, and just try to block out all the info that we're getting and just go use our own fishing brains and our own instinct and try to fish the way we would fish for pike or walleye. And it didn't take too long to find out that that was not going to work really well, because we weren't fishing for our pike or our walleye. So,
or our perch, you know.
Exactly. So I mean, that's a good piece of advice. I always say going into a tournament that you should try not to have any preconceived notions, and you'll do better.
And the old adage is go fish your strengths, right?
Right.
We've all heard that.
To fish our style, and we realized that our style was not going to work. So we had to adjust on the fly, and that seems to be, you know, often the case with tournament fishing.
Yeah.
Right. Well, before we dive into the event and all that good stuff, let's talk about getting there. What tips, tricks, snags, things that you think we need to know as far as transporting our gear over there, getting it there safely? One of my biggest concerns is, what if it gets lost along the way? You know, the airport, we have three planes, I think, so I don't know.
Well, that's a tough one, you know. I mean, I'll tell you, take as much as you can carry on, you know. So, like, my carry-on bags, I could speak for all of us, too. My carry-on backpack weighed about 60 pounds, you know, of metal and jigs and, you know, blades and, well, blade baits, you know. But, like, just, you know, stuff like that. You know, I mean, and I can tell you, but like, you know, just kind of do some research with the TSA and whatnot, like, you know, tools right. over 6 inches, you know, stuff like that. Now, the lithium batteries was an interesting one, because I forget what, there's a certain, what was it, an amperage or a wattage, Nick?
I think it's like volts times amp hours has to be under 160 or 180 or something like that.
And the lithium battery's got to be carry-on too. You can't check them, you know. So, you know, we had that for our live sonars, you know. Now, that was Nick and John brought those, and you guys didn't have a problem getting them there. It was getting home. I don't know. Yeah. Did you lose your battery there, Nick?
I lost mine on the way back as well. Yeah. And I, instead of bringing two big ones, I brought a big one and a small one. Based on that equation, I thought, well, I'll try to get away with one, and then I'll bring that smaller one. And that smaller Dakota Lithium that I had was okay.
Yeah.
But the other one, the larger 18 amp hour one was not going to go. So I had to leave that one there. Yeah. So
what was smaller? The 9 amp?
It was it was a 12 volt, 7 amp hour Dakota Lithium off of like a Hummingbird Helix 5 ice unit.
Right.
Which doesn't last very long, but I knew that I could get that there, so I would have a little time with it. So anyway.
You know, and you know, the other thing with, like, with gear and stuff, I mean, the only thing you can do is just, you know, be like, that you can control, put all your, you know, put your tags on your bags, get to the airport that you're leaving from early, you know, because that's one of your controllables. After that, it's a lot of uncontrollables. So, you know, so getting there as soon as you can. And you know what? It's just like anything. You just like tournament fishing. You know, something goes wrong, you figure a way out to improvise, you know, find a tackle shop, find something, you know. You're only.
That's usually when you learn the most, right?
Yeah, exactly. You'll figure it out, you know. Find a buddy, you know. People, like, you know, people there will, you know, you throw them a bone, they'll throw you a bone, you know, help them out, you know. And so you'll figure it out. I wouldn't worry about that too much.
I haven't had anything lost in luggage, and I've traveled overseas now for international trips probably 9 or 10 times, and still haven't really lost anything. So I don't think that's a big deal. I think it's more unnerving as you're packing and trying to thin all your gear down. But once you get it down to where you're comfortable, like, make a couple hot boxes, try to take a lot of stuff, but not too much of anything. That's kind of the key. And then when you narrow it down, and you're looking at a couple bags, you know, your luggage, it's a little calming realizing you really don't have as much stuff to keep track of as you do for a regular tournament. So on that end, once you get your bags packed and you're comfortable that you've gone through everything, I think it's important to look at your hot boxes when you're stealing from a bunch of different Plano boxes and consolidating. Just keep looking at those every day for a few days so you kind of memorize where everything's at, so you're not digging around too much. But do that, and then I think pack everything up and you should be fine. Get your stuff over there, and just the more you kind of memorize where everything's at when you consolidate, that'll just save time for you there. And it's actually, like I say, it's kind of calming when you realize I only have two suitcases full of tackle to deal with instead of a whole truckload. So
right.
From that aspect, it's actually not too bad.
Yeah. So now your rods, do your rods go on with like carry on, or did you check them?
Well, the rods, like, so I take a big Plano tube that yep. I have.
You got that.
And,
yep.
And I've flown with rods more than anybody on this planet because I do it all the time for with work and stuff. So, I'll tell you what, the best thing to do is take your rods and electrical tape from butt to tips, you know, so one butt on one tip and the other, you know, butt to the other tip, electrical tape them together, and then just build, you know, build a bundle, you know, into that, and then bubble wrap them and then put them in the tube and just put some foam on either end of the tube and they'll never break, you know.
That's a great tip.
You know, being around airplanes a lot, you know, we didn't mention that, but my full-time career, I'm an airline pilot, you know, so that's my job. So I know how these baggage handlers treat bags, you know, so it's not good. And when you're in a 400,000 pound airplane and you can feel the airplane shake and rattle because of bags, it's not good, you know? So
again, does your rod tube get treated as checked baggage, or is that?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You have to check that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, you could take it through security, but they're going to check it. You know, you could put it through I don't even know if they will let you do that. They may or may not, but because it's not like a dangerous item, but once you get to the airplane, they're going to say, oh, you got to check this, you know, and they're going to throw it down in the compartment.
That's what we'll put. Okay. Thanks for clarifying that.
Yeah. But yeah, no, you'll check it. It'll be another, you know, one of your bags, you know.
That's a good tip.
Yeah. And then same thing, you know, like for, you know, even like, you know, glide baits or like, you know, like your puppet minnows or shiver minnows or jigging wraps or, you know, and I don't even know if you're going to want that kind of stuff, but even them, I just bubble wrap them like a little bit and then put them in the Plano boxes. Cause if those things, you know, rattle around, what's going to happen? The tails are going to break off of them, you know? I use a just in case box for those in the boat, which is awesome because those they'll never get broken in there. But I wasn't practical to, you know, pack my huge just in case glide bait box, you know.
Right. So
just think of things like that, you know.
Very good. Yeah, I think I want to even like maybe duct tape all my Plano boxes shut inside the suitcase, so that way there's no chance of anything coming. Popping open, you know, last thing I'd want is a bunch of tungsten weights falling out or something or hooks or whatever, you know.
Yeah, you'll figure it out.
Very good.
It's probably the least of our worries.
Yeah, you got other things to worry about.
Yeah, well, that's awesome, man. Yeah, so as far as any other tips traveling wise, yeah, you've got all your tackle, right? You've got your rods all duct tape together or tape together, like you said, and cushioned up in your rod tube.
Use electrical tape so it doesn't get all, you know.
That's what I meant. I call everything duct tape, but that's just the way I talk. So touch just a little bit more on the battery issue. Nicholas, you there was an equation, right, that you had for
power over voltage times current, right?
I think so. I think it was that. I'd have to look it up, but it was something like that. And
so it's basically a resistance rating,
right, for your lithiums. And it didn't seem like leaving the United States they were that concerned about it, as long as it was in your carry-on, you know, because if they start on fire, they want to be able to put it out, and that's why you can't put it in the check bag. I carried my Garmin LiveScope in a shuttle, in a like an ice bundle, essentially, and then we basically mounted the transducer every day to the bow mount of whatever boat we were in. So we just had to basically screw the deucer on and then quick zip tie or electrical tape it to the shaft, you know, each day, which didn't take too long. And I guess what I would do if you're worried about losing a bunch of batteries on the way home is, you know, the smaller like ice unit size batteries is bring, you know, two or three of those, you know, maybe. If you're worried about like I had an 18 amp that I lost, you know, 18 amp hour battery, you know, that's a pretty expensive battery that I wasn't able to bring back. So, I mean, I guess unless you're the other option would be to try to get it on. You know, I had somebody, you know, that dropped us off at the airport that if I didn't get on with it, I could have left it with my, you know, with my daughter and at the airport. But, once I got on, another plan would be to think about selling it when you're over there. You know, you could take the bit, if you get a bigger one, like the 18 amp hour, if you're running any kind of a, you know, a forward facing sonar unit and you want a bigger one, maybe just talk to people over there and try to set up selling it over there would be a good gig. And I mean, and that goes for anything tackle wise that, you know, is a pain to travel with, you know, you could always, you know, sell something while you're over there. So that's always an option. I think that's a great option for batteries, because a battery is just a battery. It's not like your favorite fishing rod or something like that. And there's probably people over there, you can get at least a fair price for a lithium battery over there that did buy it, you know. So that's something to think about.
And I just found it, you know, real quick for the limit. It's 100 watt hours is the max you can have, and the watt hours is just amps times volts. So
yeah, amps, yep, times volts.
Yep. So you basically, you know, for a 12 volt, you can have an, you know, an eight amp hour battery is about the most you can have, you know.
Oh man, that's interesting, because that, I mean, that when you put it in those terms, that seems like that really limits the amount of power that you can have to run a unit. You know, for example, I typically run a Lowrance Elite 9 TI unit. I had planned on taking a 12 volt, 23 amp hour battery with me to do all that. So that sounds like that might be a little much.
Yeah, or just, you know, the other thing is just buy it over there and then sell it over there, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, or...
Both John Boyer and I were both able to get our batteries over there, and he had two Dakota Lithium 23 amp hour batteries, but they were sticklers on it on the way back. So
okay. Getting there is no problem. Getting the way back, okay, that makes things easier. I like the idea that you just suggested about just maybe just even put it up for sale, or just even giving it to somebody over there. That'd be fine.
Exactly. Even gifting it to somebody is a great idea as well.
Right on.
And if you don't, like, if you're in a situation where you can't get the bigger one over, I guess the best thing you could do is have a bunch, you know, like three or four of the smaller ones, because even we, when Ryan and I ran with my little Dakota Lithium, that 12.7, I mean, that still ran for like 3 to 4 hours, even with a big unit on it. So,
okay.
Even if you can get a couple of those to string your day together, you know, you'd maybe be okay doing that too.
Right on. Okay. Gotcha.
And there's no limit on the amount of batteries that you can take, just the size of them.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm assuming it's probably going to be very difficult to ship them over. You know, if we were just,
yeah, I don't know. I didn't try any of that. I'm not sure how that would go.
Or even order them and have them delivered over there.
Yeah. If you have a contact over there, that might be something that you could work out with somebody ahead of time.
Well, our other teammate, Eric Jackson, he's got the Apex factory an hour away, I think he said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm thinking we can always just, I don't know, ship something there. If it gets there early, it doesn't matter. Sure. Maybe. I don't know. Anyways, how about we get into, let's talk about some Xander. Well, we'll talk about some walleye too. We'll start with what differences did you realize when you got over there as opposed to like our walleye, our Lake Erie walleye?
Typically, when you get to that fall fishing for us, October is, you know, you guys know, obviously, that walleye seem to start getting more aggressive, putting that feed bag on and putting some weight on over the winter. And so we went over there thinking that we would be doing a lot of snap jigging, aggressive fishing for fish that were going to be actively starting to put on weight, you know, going into the winter. And what we found was the Xander weren't at all like walleye as far as aggressiveness in this time of year. And they wanted, you know, that what they were eating was just very more subtle. And even some of the people we talked to there, some of the other people from different countries that have fished Xander more, were telling us how Xander will even eat some dead bait, you know. So, you know, everything that we could tell, we weren't catching them well by our typical lift and drop snap jigging techniques. And it seemed like, you know, we were learning that our whatever we were fishing with had to stay closer to the bottom, and it had to move consistently slow, and any kind of a fast movement. And I mean, what I always tell people is to try to visualize what that fish is doing. You can kind of look with your forward facing sonar and kind of see what they're doing, but it was really hard to fish, like to live scope fish, just because the fish were actually swimming around pretty well, but you couldn't move a bait at the speed they were fishing. So like what I was trying to explain is it was almost mathematically impossible to just cast at one and try to target an individual fish, because as fast as the fish were moving, if you moved your bait that fast, they wouldn't bite it. So in the end, it was the Xander were much less aggressive than our walleyes are for this time of year. That's what we found. And we made those adjustments. And every day Ryan and I fished, we were able to kind of, I think, visualize how those fish really wanted it better. And once we understood that, we kind of knew how they were tracking it back to the boat. Even though we were fishing it slow, it was just, you know, the right cadence that triggered the bites. And it was very subtle and very slow. And so, I mean, from that, the biggest thing is the biggest takeaway was, is the Xander were much less aggressive than walleye, even though the bites were hard. In general, they didn't feed as aggressively. So
what was the clarity where you guys were fishing in the Czech Republic?
It was probably what, Ryan, you think?
2-3 feet.
Yeah, I was going to say 3 feet. Three feet. It was clear water that was
like tannic.
Tannic stained water, tea-colored water, but it was clear. It wasn't turbid. So
yeah,
it was darker water. We were fishing in like a lot of, not much shallower than 25, a lot of 25, 26 feet of water, you know, and varying a little bit deeper as the day wore on, a little bit shallower in the morning.
What was the water temperatures of that since you were fishing that deep, what were the water temperatures like?
I think it was like about 60 degrees, right, Nick?
Yeah, I think that sounds about right.
Yeah. Right. You know, like, one of the things kind of like, you know, touching on what Nick said and adding to it is, you know, one way we're used to, you know, on the aggressive standpoint of fishing is we're used to, you know, we put a lot of us put our forward facing sonar on our bow mounts, and we're running around and, you know, active targeting those fish, like sniping them, chasing them around and casting to those individual ones. And the problem we found with that is, when you're moving like that, so is your bait moving. You know, it's hard to that is precisely as we needed to control our bait and move that, you know, we were casting, you know, using swim baits and move those along the bottom to just get that tail, that swim bait just barely wobbling. If you're moving in the boat, it just didn't seem to work, you know? So, and it ended up kind of like one of the breakthroughs, I think, is when we found out like, okay, we need to just spot lock, you know, where we're just sitting there, you know, almost. And at one point we even actually just dropped a real anchor instead of spot locking with the bow mount. And, you know, just to try to keep that much more precise on our spot and not worry about what the bow mount was doing. And then we could more precisely control our baits. And, you know, that seemed to be a thing, you know? And I think like, you know, the other thing too, you know, a difference I would say too, is these fish seem to be deeper, you know, like, I'm like, why can't we go up and fish up in, you know, 8 feet of water, you know, like a reservoir, like, hey, if I'm going to go fish a reservoir in Ohio, you know, in the fall, I'm casting a blade bait up in 3 feet of water, you know, for walleye, right. You know, and it just didn't seem like that, you know, they just seemed to be deeper, you know, those fish. And, you know, like we were throwing quarter ounce jig in 30 feet of water, you know, and so I'm like, that's crazy, you know, like it would never do that, you know.
Quarter ounce would take a minute to get down there, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean,
light line, I suppose, too, though, right?
It was every day we figured it out a little bit better. We started with heavier jigs and we caught some fish, but we were missing where these fish would, they'd snap at it and it just with the heavier jig wouldn't get it, you know, they wouldn't suck it in and they weren't going to hit it again. It was kind of a one bang. And we basically knew that it would be harder to fish that depth. And, you know, with that kind of a bait, it's just not the right setup, but you know, you just have to get into that mindset that it has to be that, and we have to stay in bottom contact and it has to be slow. So what that evolved into is going lighter and slower, and we started, you know, landing more fish, more of our bites would get hooked up. I mean, we missed a few, but we weren't even putting a hook in any of those fish. They wouldn't even get the bait. So then once we dialed it into the lighter baits, we actually started getting them to get it in their mouth better. And there was so many things that we dialed in and it, a little bit better every day with that we were in a small creek arm quite a ways, almost a mile back up in a creek arm off the main channel. And it wasn't a real wide channel and it had more of a flux current, like a wind that would fill it up. It would fill up and then drain. So there was always current going one way or the other. And it was very critical, you know, to the every day to realize which way the fish were facing in that current and how, you know, what you could optimize your bait in their face better. You know, what way would they get on it and track it and bite better? Every day it seemed like fishing, you know, a certain way with or against the current was better. So we had to really stay in tune with that. And we were able to spot lock in each fish a different direction until we kind of, you know, had more bites in a certain direction and then capitalize on that once we figured that out. Another thing that came into play that was really cool was if you visualize that swim bait, when you cast, let it hit bottom, and then, you know, we're basically slow. It was the one turn of the reel, stop, one slow turn of the reel, stop, one slow. And every time you're not moving your rod, you're moving the reel. So as that bait gets closer to the boat, the angle's changing. And once it got into that realm of, you know, closer to a 45 degree angle, you got to realize one turn of the reel is going to make it move farther. And I think those fish that were tracking that bait realized same speed, but he's moving farther and getting away from me now. And then they'd attack it. That's just at least how I visualized it, because we'd get to that 45, like that last 20 feet, try to fish it all the way to vertical. And so many in the last, a lot of those bites, certain days, it seemed like a lot of those bites came in that last little bit. And it was just the way that bait was moving a little farther with that crank when the angle was steeper. So just little nuances like that were very critical to figuring it out.
Yeah. And, you know, just like that, like when we were fishing those heavier baits, all of the bites on those heavier baits, the first, when they came, they all came like, so one of the rules of this tournament too is you are not allowed to fish vertical. So you have to be retrieving the, you have to be bringing it in. It's got to be, you know, you can do pauses, but you got to always be coming forward. So we would do that until it was, you know, just about to the vertical point. When we were fishing those heavier ones, all those bites came in that last little bit. And we were thinking about it, and it's like, well, you know, that last little bit, it's moving forward so much slower pace than when you cast it way out there, you know? So then using those lighter jigs and then figuring that out. And just like Nick said, when those bites came at that 45, we had a lot more of our cast. It was kind of like we were able to make effective, you know? So we started not just catching fish close to the boat, but, you know, in different realms too, but still, you know, that 45 to in was definitely the, you know, the key zone, you know? So
it was fun.
Yeah. That's amazing. It was a lot of fun, man.
That's what you call getting dialed in.
We should, why don't we let you guys just kind of paint us the picture of, from the day that you landed going through practice, the struggles, the wins, you know, and just share it with us. And before we get started, this was just so everybody listening knows, it was the Carnivorous Artificial Bait Boat Angling World Championship, right? In the Czech Republic.
That's right. Yep.
Yep.
Well, I mean, so we all kind of, you know, had our various flights and met over there and all got in the van. There's, you know, and headed up. It was pretty interesting packing everybody up into this van and all of our luggage. And you know, one thing we did is we got there a day early, a day before the official registration, which I think was a good thing, you know, because you're on a 6-hour time change, and just getting there and getting, you know, settled into our, you know, our rooms and checking that out. And, you know, we went out and just saw a little bit of, you know, went to a local Czech restaurant and, you know, just kind of got a little bit of the lay of the land and, I don't know, almost, you know, even just build some team camaraderie a little bit too there, you know. And then, it was just come up with there's the registration, and then there's the opening ceremonies. And then it's like, okay, now, you know, everybody's showing up, all these different countries, all different languages, you know, you start seeing media showing up, you know, everybody's flags are out there. And then you kind of, you know, one of the things for us, it was kind of like, you know, the cards are kind of stacked against us going over to a different country overseas, you know, just there's a lot of things, the different species. But then one of the things was like, you see the boats, you know, it's like, okay, here we go, you know, because I think there was 16 countries, and 14 out of the 16 countries brought their own boats. Because they're all within driving range in Europe. You know, the only countries that didn't have their own boats were us and Ireland. And so the host country has to provide rental boats. And, you know, some of these boats were, I mean, they were pretty bare bones, you know, like, you know, 16 footers, maybe 17, little outboards, you
15, know, 15, 14.
14, I think we were in, you know, so it's kind of like, you know, but you know, we've made it work, and you know, and then it's 2 days of practice, so 2 official days of practice. Nick and I, and then John and Max were in a boat, and then our team manager and our sub were in another boat, so they can fish for the first 2 days of practice. And you get like 8 hours. I think it was like 8 to 7. Yeah, 7 hours or something like that. You get 2 days of practice and that's it. And then you got to go. And, you know, the other unusual challenge for this tournament, and, you know, just so you understand a little bit about the format, is it's the boat angling. So we're out of boats, carnivorous, you know, go through that. It's predator fish. Okay. So whatever the host country determines the predator fish that they want you to target on that body of water, we go after. So one of the interesting dynamics of it is there's 4 different species we could target. It was zander, pike, perch, and asp. So part of the gamesmanship of this, and you know, part of the poker match, you could say, of it is okay, what species do we target, you know? Because the way it works is they take the length, there's a minimum scoreable length for each of those species. And then they take the length of that fish in centimeters and they square it, you know? So you have to, you got to kind of run the algorithm like, okay, if I catch four, you know, if I catch a 30 centimeters perch, that's 900 points, okay? If I catch a 60 centimeter zander, that's 3,600 points, you know? So I got to catch four perch to one zander, you know? Can I do that, you know? And you have 2 days to figure that out, you know? So
right.
And figure out, hey, what can you catch? What's worthwhile to target, you know? And which one do you want to target? So it's a heck of a challenge, you know? And that's kind of what we're trying to figure out in those 2 days of practice. And then, you know, then the tournament becomes a learning experience too, that you can adjust, you know?
Right.
So
yeah, we're pretty lucky that we're getting over 3 days before the official day off of the event, right?
Right.
There's one day that the water's off the limit.
Monday is off limits. Yeah, Monday is right. The open ceremonies and all that. So.
But we're getting there Friday morning, so we'll have hopefully Friday to explore the waterway. Saturday, Sunday to pre-fish. Monday is off limits, and then Tuesday, Wednesday would be tournament practice.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, if it's anything like this one, you know, if these other countries approach it anything like this, those guys are already on the water right now as we're speaking, you know, because like for ours, you know, we have this week-long closed practice. Well, some of these teams were there for a month prior to that, and they had three or four boats on the water every day for that month practicing. And then they go off for the official practice. So, you know, it's something that we weren't able to make happen. But like, you know, hey, next time I'll try to find a way to make it happen, you know, like just, you know, anything. And I, you know, there's some discussion on should that be, you know, should it be a further off limits time, you know, to even the playing field or whatnot. But, you know, it's a heck of a challenge for us, you know, so.
What's your opinion on that? Whether it should be, you know, a further off limits time or if,
well,
if
I mean,
it really matters to you.
No, I'd like to see like either more official practice or a bigger chunk of off limits, you know, like 2 or 3 weeks, you know, or something like that, you know, just to even
change things up a little bit.
You know, I don't know. I don't know. You know, it's tough the way it is for sure, you know, but
there's always two sides of every coin. You know that, I mean, they, you know, we could have the next Predator World Championships could be here in our own land.
Well, and it is,
right?
You know,
okay, so then you got all this time to prepare for it, right? And they don't. So it's going to up and down.
Yeah.
I definitely see it.
They'll be here though. There's countries there that are more funded by the government they'll have boats here for a month here.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I would bet. I'm sure some of them are actually talking about coming this year yet to look at it now even. So, so we'll see.
Where's it going to be?
We're having it at right now. It's planned for Green Bay in the Lower Bay and in the Fox River.
Oh.
And I don't know exactly what they're going to do for boundaries yet, but that's what we're looking at. And, yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think it's a great opportunity for us, and we're all excited. But I also, on the other hand, I'm realistic, and I understand that I've been to three of these now, and I have not seen the home country even medal yet in three of them. So it's nice to have some home field advantage, but I haven't seen the home team take advantage of it yet. So that's interesting too. You know, you got to realize these guys are all mostly professional tournament fishermen as well, and they're good at it. And who knows, you know, I hope we can take it the advantage and bring it home, but I'm also realistic that it's not going to be a picnic, and we're going to have to work really hard, you know, to try to make sure we get everything dialed as best we can. It's still fishing.
Right.
Yep. There's a reason it's a world championship, right? Because you're competing against the best in the world.
Yeah, you know, you think like, I mean, these guys are, they're like, I mean, I knew they would be good, you know, but like, they're really good, you know, like I'll just, you know, being in the fishing industry and around fishermen my whole life, you know, you could just tell when someone's a legit good fisherman. Every single one of these guys that I met from all these different countries, you could just tell that they, you know, just the way they, you know, just even the way a guy ties a knot or handles the rods, or, you know, like, I mean, you could just tell, you know, these guys are, you know, just the way their mannerisms in their boats and, you know, netting a fish, and these guys are, they're dialed, you know, so it's a legit world championship for sure, you know.
Well, it sounds like to me, as far as, you know, being dialed, the way you just described how you all got dialed in throughout your practice to, you know, figure out that it was a certain angle and a certain speed and, you know, all of that before you actually got a good solid bite. It sounds like to me they're just lucky that the tournament wasn't like 4 days long instead of two, because you were on it. You were on it.
Well, so what happened too, you know, like, and why we, like, why we didn't do better than we did is the thing is it became a perch tournament, you know, the perch, the guys, you know, to get some, we, you know, we caught some perch, you know, but like, we just felt like from the information that we had, our chances were better targeting Xander. Well, it turned out and maybe that was the best we could do, was targeting Xander for us. But the teams that went out and targeted perch and figured out and dialed the perch, they're the ones who blew it open, you know, and blew it away. So it became a perch tournament. Nick and I were talking, you know, like, if this was a Xander tournament, we would have done really, really well. And, you know, even if we had days like our second and third day, all 3 days, and then our other teammates had those days, we would have been close. I think we figured we would have been close to medaling, you know, on that.
Yeah.
We still wouldn't have beat the teams. Like, Estonia and Lithuania were really dialed in on the perch. I mean, one of the days, the guy, they caught 70 perch, you know, 70 scoreable perch, you know.
Nice.
So, and you know, the thing too is, you know, the first day of the tournament, we get back there, you know, in our spot, and actually we couldn't even get right into our spot. There's a 50-meter rule. You have to be 50 meters from any other boats that are set up and fishing, and each boat has a range finder, and you have your marshal in the boat that, you know, confirming that. Well, we get back there, and of course we're not winning any boat races with our 25 horse flat bottom boat, you know, and
little John boat.
Yeah, we get back there, and both the Czech teams and the Poland team were back in the area kind of that we wanted to be, you know. We couldn't quite get to it, but, you know, the Czech team, hey, this is our home body of water, and they were clearly targeting Xander, and the Czech team's really good. I mean, I think they won, Nick, you correct me if I'm wrong, I think they won
they won in South Africa, and they were second, I think, at England. They're a very good team.
Yeah, and then their home body of water, and they're targeting Xander, you know, and it's their home body of water, and they were wrong on the species to target too, you know. So it's not easy, that's for sure, you know. But we, you know, if it was a Xander tournament, I think we would have done very well, you know. And
right.
even if we were dialed, you know, from day one or two, you know, if we had one more day. And then we put our other USA team on the same program, you know, we might have been dangerous. But, you know, one of the things we decided, we, you know, as a team after day one, when we realized, okay, these guys are blowing it up on the perch, and Nick and I, we didn't start figuring out our Xander. We caught four on the first day, and we caught them all late in the afternoon after we started making these adjustments and kind of got more on to where we wanted to be. We're like, well, we think we can progress a lot with his Xander. And Nick and John, you guys go out and see if you can unlock
Max and perch, John, yeah.
Or I'm sorry, Max and John, you guys go out and see if you can unlock this perch thing. And it's the other interesting thing that we're not, you know, used to is communication's allowed. So we're allowed to like call each other on phones, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, this is crazy too. Just like some of these other countries, they had like they had like 8 or 10 man teams there. There's only 4 guys on the water, but their other 6 guys are all around the lakes, maybe in the woods with binoculars and calling and making reports and like, you know, and all that's within the realm of the rules, you know? So it's just like, you know,
yeah, that's a lot different from,
it's definitely different, you know,
the Lake Erie Walleye Trail, no communication.
No. Yeah. So.
Yeah, it was cool how we were able to go, you know, that first day we didn't catch anything till afternoon. We just couldn't get on the right spot and we didn't really realize how we had to work that angle and that current quite right. Caught 4 and missed a few. We didn't execute great. And we figured by the next day, we could at least double that up. And we came close. We came in, went from 4 to 7 and then, you know, and that moved us, you know, the first day, I think Ryan and I were 20 out of 32 boats with, you know, kind of a slow morning and not the greatest execution. And then by the second day, we were 15th out of 32 with 7, and we still figured we'd get better. And then the next day, we didn't really have the crazy bite windows, but we still were able to boost it up to 10 and then finish 7th out of 32, which was pretty respectable. And we, you know, probably our best moments over there, you know, for me, remembering when I know how proud some of these guys are from these other countries, and they were really excited about, holy smokes, this U.S. boat caught 10 Xanders today. You know, what the heck? Because nobody was really catching Xander that good anymore after that, and are not catching him very well. And I had, you know, guys I know from ICE that were coaching the Ukrainian team, and they're usually a powerhouse on ICE. You know, they drug me right over after the tournament. We're like, you got to tell us where you were and what you were using and how you're getting the Xander to bite, you know. And same with England, you know, they were saying they were getting the bites and not getting hooked up. And so we made some key adjustments. And it's just nice to know you made a little noise over there. Like my old buddy Pete always says, well, you didn't get sand kicked in your face, you know. And I don't think by any means Ryan and I got sand kicked in our face. We put on a pretty good show. And effectively, it wasn't the outcome we wanted, but based on what we were dealt for cards, and I think, you know, we did the best we could with the hand we were dealt, you know, and the amount of time we had, we optimized and fished pretty strong by the time all was said and done.
I mean, you had what, 5 days to dial in a fishery that you've never laid physical eyes on or seen, so
right.
I think you guys did a hell of a time.
Like I said, it was a heck of a challenge, you know. So, and, you know.
Well, yeah. The guy that took the individual, one of the half of the team that was in the individual gold boat, who also their team won the gold medal from Estonia, he's a sponsor for my ICE team that gives us our ICE augers, our hand augers, and he owns that company, Nero Ice Augers. Evil. And, he told me, you know, I was like, man, we kind of, you know, could have had a better showing at the end. And he's like, Nick, you know, in 2 days, we didn't have a clue what was going on here. He said, you just have to train longer. You know, he said it took our team a long time to figure out the bite for the first they were on. So, you know, I understand that. And just like I say, it's more fuel for the fire, give you a little bit more drive for the next time and see if we can, you know, if we get funding for it, great. You know, maybe time commitment wise, it's something where some of these teams, any of the discipline
block, where even if like break it into shifts where one boat would, 2 guys go over there for a week and then tag out with the next 2 for a week and then the next 2 for a week and potentially string together 3 weeks, you know, even with everybody taking an extra week, you know, before the cutoff. Or even if it was less than that, even if we had like 2 guys go for 2 or 3 or 4 guys go for a week, and even graphing the body of water so you kind of have an idea what you're getting into before you arrive there, I think would be huge. So that's kind of something to think about and chew on going into the off season, thinking about where we're going to be next. So.
So you were, with all of the adjustments that you were making, you were specifically, we're talking about the different retrieves and the different angles and, you know, Did you have to experiment with different line sizes, different colors of baits as well, or is it mostly just a speed issue?
I think for the most part, I ran stuff I'm most comfortable with, and I don't think, you know, I mean, we both were using a super line mainline. I was using I had rods with Sunline SX1 and the Sunline Plasma Grade as well. And I usually use like a 12-pound mainline, which is a really fine diameter. And then we probably both alternated a little bit with leader size. But at the end of the day, knowing that that was darker water and we were fishing in 26 feet of water, you know, you could easily get away with, I was using Sunline Shooter for a lead, and, you know, about a three-foot lead was plenty. Lower carbon to my grade, and using either 12 or 14 pounds was not a problem just because of the dirty water. And it's also important, too, to have enough beef to where you could get a good hook set in them if you get a bite on it, and it will drop way out away from the boat. So I use a pretty stiff rod, so I have to use the heavier leader. So I give it to them pretty hard.
Yeah, you know, I mean, kind of went with confidence baits, you know, and then, you look at the forage of the lake, and remember I walked down there the first night, after dark, me and Max walked down and shined a flashlight in the water, and you just saw a ton of like little perch, you know, like 3-inch perch, like all over. I'm like, well,
there you go.
Perch colored stuff, you know, some, you know, bright oranges and chartreuses and stuff, you know, and then also you just see like big white minnows swimming around too, you know, so it's like, well, you know, the simple thing you can do with something like that is, you know, match the hatch, you know, so I was basically kind of just went with white stuff or like perchy, chartreusey, orangish type stuff, and, you know, went from there. And then it was just kind of like, you know, then it's more looking at the action of the bait, you know. I was throwing mostly those on the swim bait heads. I was throwing the Northland slurp heads, which I think is a great swim bait head. One thing is it no matter, you know, whether you're, you know, it's out at a distance or even right under the boat, it lays that swim bait, just kind of stays just pretty much right horizontal. And then it's got a nice thin wire hook, so you can, you know, you can get that hook set, you know, in that fish pretty easily. You don't have to like really, you know, totally hammer it, you know. It's not like you're ripping it through weeds or anything like that. So right. that was a good hook, you know, for that. And then confidence baits, you know, is what it came down to.
Right.
What was the average size swim baits you were throwing?
Most of what we were throwing was I did pretty good on the 4-inch Kitech Easy Shiner, and then the Walleye Assassin, which is similar. I think that's a 3.5 or 4-inch, I believe, paddle tail. We did catch some in practice. I know Nick caught one in practice on quite a bit bigger. I think that was like maybe a 4.6 or something. And then, we caught one on a fluke too, but you know, that Kitech Easy Shiner and the Walleye Assassins were, you know, our go-tos for nice. Me, I think, you know, yeah.
Well, we pretty much covered all the other questions that I had as far as technique and Xander. I feel a lot more confident. There was some things that I came across in research, you know, that kind of led me to the swim baits. And there's a show on YouTube called Xander Pro. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. But all those guys, that's what they're throwing is those swim baits, but they're all big jig heads. So I don't have anything small.
You know, the one thing that's nice about a swim bait is like, you know, I took a whole bunch of jerk baits and crank baits and all that kind of stuff, you know, and, you know, I mean, you think about it like in a reservoir or a river system, you know, those Xander, they're not, I mean, they did suspend a little bit. We saw them, but they're easier to target right on the bottom, you know, and a swim bait, it's easy to, you know, keep it on the bottom or adjust that in through various depths, you know, whereas, you know, crankbaits or, you know, other things like that. So, you know, that's something like, you know, going to a river like you guys or a reservoir, like, you know, similar to ours, that's, you know, a good advantage of that. You know, the other thing is, you know, Nick got a couple, I think he got like two or three of them on a blade bait too.
The
On the last day. And I knew it worked. I know I'd seen the Hungry team catch a few on a blade bait, and that's a just crazy confidence bait for me this time of year. I'm just feel like I know I'm gonna catch them on this, and that's kind of the way I'm like. Whenever things got slow, Ryan and I used the attitude where we always kept one of us using something that we know is working the best. And then if we hit a lull, one guy would experiment, and always one using what we know works. And sometimes it paid off and sometimes it didn't. We made some changes, and, you know, we started out mostly with the chartreuse. And then I think at one point Ryan switched to white and whacked a couple quick ones. And, you know, we ended up switching more to like a more of a natural and a white. And then, you know, we were on that for a while. And when that got slow on that last day, I thought, you know, I'm going to keep firing through some different stuff. And I tried a gold blade bait, you know, a simple gold half ounce blade bait. And it was really sunny out. And I thought, you know, I'm going to catch one on this. And I fished it as slow as I possibly could stand it. And I still was trying to just short crank that thing, so it barely left the bottom. Just, you know, just a half reel turn at a time. And trying to do the same kind of presentation as the swim bait. And, you know, I eventually, you know, pretty quick that when I picked it up, I caught one real close to the boat and he was barely hooked. We got that one. And then, you know, we were kind of in a lull again. And then I bomb casted and I got one first hop and fought one a long ways back to the boat with it. And I think, yeah, I ended up catching three on it on the last day. And then ended up last fish I caught on the swim bait again. But so again, it was a confidence bait. I felt like I knew the cadence that I needed to fish with, and just had the confidence to give it a try and try to present the way I thought they needed it presented, and was able to capitalize on that. Maybe something that some of those fish hadn't seen all week.
Awesome.
Well, it sounds like a great time. I'm really looking forward to going for the kayak fishing world championship next week. And you know, maybe when we come back, we can kind of bring you guys back on again and switch roles, and you guys can kind of take over and we can just talk more Xander.
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you what, you know, I just thought of this too. You know, you're asking about pieces of advice and packing, and one thing that Nick and I talked about, you know, that would have been nice to have is, you know, you go over there and you're graphing around and using electronics and, you know, trying to read things, you know, your sonars and forward facing sonar. Well, real, you know, just like any other fishery, there's a lot of other fish in there beside your target species, you know. And when you said Hinnadon, you got a clear water reservoir, it would have been nice to have a camera sometimes, you know. So I don't, you know, they have those little mini AquaView cameras that you can, you know, very portable. And it would be nice to have had that to just be like, okay, what are these fish, you know, or what is this bait look like, you know, or like, you know, so that might be something you want to think about, you know, if you can get your hands on that, you know.
That's a great idea. I mean, even a GoPro on a string, you know, if it's new enough, you should be able to just transfer it over to your phone once you get it back up. Obviously
it's nice to see it. Well, yeah, I don't know that GoPro technology like you do, but I mean, it's nice to just boom, see it right there, you know, what
real time
right next to what your sonar is showing too, you know. And in okay, this is exactly this spot too, you know. So yeah.
Right.
I think, Ryan, about the schools of bait fish we saw early on when we started graphing, there was kind of weird, I mean, just the way the bait was assembled looked different than what we're used to. You know, they're kind of big loose schools, and we're like, I don't know what they are. You know, I still don't know if those were perch suspended in big loose schools like that.
Yeah.
You know, I think that some of them were the smaller perch were kind of up off bottom and then big, you know, kind of loose schools, not really dense. And then there was schools that were dense. And then there was, you know, packs of the bigger perch roaming on bottom, and just a lot of different dynamics going on for fish species that we're not used to. So it would have been nice to just drop a camera and look and say, okay, that's some kind of silver pelagicate fish, or it's just perch roaming, you know, and, you know, and that gives you an idea of what bait you want to use, and, you know, and it's just another piece of the puzzle. So yeah, I mean, I have a couple of Aquavie micro slice fish, and it would have been nice to just drop one of them down and get a look at what was down there.
Right.
Good idea.
Well, Mike, do you have any more questions?
Man, I don't. I just definitely, I'm excited as all get out, and I'm really thankful for you two guys to share some of your time and insight with us here tonight, and we certainly appreciate it.
Yeah, you know, it's really a game changer, especially you guys are walleye. You guys use a lot of the techniques that we use, you know, Mike and I, to target walleye. So, you know, hearing how you went through the progressions and what struggles and really what the solutions were, you know, honestly, I don't know if I would have thought to go lighter on the jig heads, or even if I would have been prepared for that. So who knows? Maybe you just helped us get the gold.
I hope so, man. Go Team USA, you know. Heck yeah. I was pumped last week seeing our bass team win gold, you know. I felt like I was part of the team, even though those guys probably don't have a clue who I am. I still felt like, you know, I was like pumped for them, you know, like, yeah, USA go gold. It just made me like the fire burn harder, you know, like they defended their home turf this year, and, you know, makes me want to even do it, you know, that much more for next year, you know. So
yeah, but
I'll sure. be pumped to see you guys do well too, you know. So
well, we're excited.
Well, Ryan, Nick, thanks for joining us today. Mike, thanks for coming on, being a guest host. And like I said, maybe we'll talk about doing a flip when we come back. You guys can do the interviews, and we'll talk more Xander, talk more techniques, and educate some more anglers.
Yeah,
that sounds cool. Great, guys. Good luck, and enjoy your adventure. You know, enjoy every minute of it. It's a great life experience, and stay focused as much as you possibly can, and just, you know, use your instinct and keep your head in it, and, you know, just try to keep making good decisions, stacking them up, and things will play out. So hopefully,
all right. For
you. Good luck.
Appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Guys.
Yep. Yep,
thank bye. You.
All right. Help. See you guys.
Yeah.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the show. Don't forget to leave us a review and subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast listening app. We will see you on the next episode. And remember, for me, fishing is life.